Tired of the same old sports analysis? Then you need the SMQBs podcast. They're five attorneys, they're sports fanatics, and they're ready to make their case. Welcome to Sports Talk with an Edge. It's House.
Pitch, please.
Pope.
Put us out of our misery.
Rooster.
Oh, boo-hoo.
And Bison.
They got to get their shit together and fast.
SMQBs, episode 219. This is Rooster here with a message to leaders of plaintiff law firms out there. Supio is superior AI for plaintiff's law. It combines the power of specialized AI, or as Linda McMahon would call it, A1, and human accuracy in a unified platform. It helps firms work smarter from pre-litigation through trial. See why leading firms are moving to Supio at supio.com. That's SUPIO.com. Fellas, we've got Milk and Pope here with us today. What's up?
How are you, Rooster? Milk?
Doing all right. Got a little cold.
Doing well.
Today.
No House or Bison tonight.
A little cold. Well, you need to make sure you have a little brown for that.
Oh,
that's God. What I recommend.
It's the one time I don't like a little brown.
That's right.
It makes it worse.
Maybe a little.
You feed a cold bourbon.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what's to
say. Maybe a little honey to go along with your.
That's right.
Your bourbon.
I don't know. Ugh. Maybe the bourbon had something to do with the cold.
I had enough of that this weekend.
The bourbon had something to do with the cold. That would make sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to move along to the section of the program we call Who Are You Going to Take to the Bar?
Speaking of bourbon,
talking about people who would be an interesting barroom chat in this week of sports. Pope, who are you taking to the bar?
Since Toby House is not here, nobody else is going to probably know who this is, but I'm taking Ange Postecoglou, who is the now sacked manager of Tottenham Hotspurs.
Yeah, I know that.
There you go. A little Premier League there for you. Ange was sacked this week after an abysmal Premier League season where Tottenham was actually only one place from being relegated, which is just horrific for a team like them that has a payroll as high as they do and expectations, you know, that they'll get hardware every year. And in light of the fact that they won the European Cup, which was the first time Tottenham had won anything in 17 years, you would have expected maybe him to be treated better. And evidently the fans, certainly the players are kind of upset about it. But I wanted to take him to the bar. Tottenham is my team, has been since we all picked teams in the Premier League, and buy him a drink, thank him for his service and the opportunity to finally get some hardware, and wish him well because he did at least provide that for us.
Seems like a trend right now in sports. A coach takes a team to heights they've never been before and a long time and then gets fired for it.
Not good enough.
Yeah.
A right. Knicks reference?
Knicks, the Stars.
Yeah. DeBoer.
And the Spurs.
I could take Tottenham DeBoer Spurs. Also.
What
take
about
all
you,
of
Milk?
Those guys.
Milk, who are you taking to the bar?
Well, sometimes you take people to a bar because you just feel sorry for them. And I've reached the point of, I don't know what to do with Paul Skeens. I feel terrible for this guy. He has an ERA of 1.88. That is second best in the NL. But he has a 4-6 record. And this Sunday, he went into the eighth inning against the Phillies, gave up one run the entire game, which is generally what he does, obviously, with his ERA. The Pirates can't score anything when he's pitching. And he got a no decision, which everyone was very like, wow, good job, man. You got a no decision. You didn't actually lose. But this guy's pitching his lights out, unbelievable year, and he's on this awful team. And I feel sad for him. But I don't know what to do because I don't think the Pirates are going to spend any money to build a team around him. So I guess he'll just be a Dodger one day and
or a Yankee.
No, I'm a Yankee. No.
Are we really feeling that sorry for Paul Skeens though? Considering
as side much piece? Feel sorry for a. Future billionaire and he's got
and
a
Libby
nice
Dunn his
he's doing all right.
I think he's doing okay.
He'll be okay. He'll be all right.
I think he's going to make it.
Get that Pirates team. My God.
Ugh. I'm going to take to the bar the former governor of Massachusetts. You know who that is?
Charlie Baker?
Charlie Baker, who left crazy world of politics to get into being the head of amateur college sports. He's the president of the NCAA, and I'm sure he thought that was going to be a nice little change of pace. And then he gets in there, and House versus NCAA settlement happens and is approved this week. And I'm wondering if he's second-guessing his decision, because his life is about to be turned upside down by this, and we'll talk about that later. But I'd really like to hear his take on that. So speaking of that, let's talk House versus NCAA, fellas. $2.8 billion, 10-year settlement approved last week. The part, we don't need to talk about this part, but part of it is back pay for the students who missed out on NIL, you know, whose name, image, and likeness were used without their consent before there was an ability to pay them. The part I think we need to focus on is beginning this July 1st, schools are going to be able to pay directly players, and they're going to get $20,500,000 per school to do it. There's going to be revenue sharing cap that goes up 4% a year, except for years 4, 7, and 10. And then in year 10, the Power Four baselines will be determined and stick for the next 10 years, which, of course, everything's going to be going up by then. It looks like the schools are earmarking 75% for football, 15% for basketball, a mere 5% for women's basketball, and then a tiny 5% for everything else, including women's softball, men's baseball, you name it, soccer, lacrosse, you name it. So what do you think? Let's focus on the big two sports, football and basketball, for a second. You think this is going to produce more or less parity in college sports?
Well, I don't know if we know the answer to that yet, because you know, the NIL, as I understand it, is outside of the 20.5 million stipend or whatever the schools are going to be able to distribute to the athletes. And you know, NIL money is where the big action has been, but they created this College Sports Commission as a result of this settlement. It's going to basically be vetting these NIL deals. If it's over $600, which, I mean, what NIL deal is not over $600, then you have to report it to this commission. And then they will be vetting it to whether it has a valid business purpose and is within a reasonable range of compensation, whatever the fuck that means. If the schools are able to continue to wheel and deal with NIL money the same that they have been, and they add the $20 million on top of that, then the big schools will continue to feast. Milk, you know, SEC will continue to feast. Ohio State, Michigan, those schools, same thing. Oregon. But if the NIL deals become less lucrative, then parity may come back somewhat, because you'll already have 20 and a half. And then on top of that, you know, the NIL won't be able to go outrageously to get these athletes. So maybe they can go to other schools they may want to compete at. Maybe they'll get to start. Maybe they'll get to star because they're not getting paid the big NIL money, but at least they can get money from the collective $20.5 million. That's kind of my thoughts.
Milk, I saw a counterpoint to Pope's argument today, which goes something like this. If you're a booster who's been paying NIL money in the past, you're less likely to want to do that now, because the NCAA has, what they haven't done is address this thing where players come in, take the money, and leave in a year. And who's going to want to pay that kind of NIL money to somebody who's not going to stick around? So what are your thoughts on whether that's going to change, and how the, if it does change, how that will affect parity?
I mean, that's been a problem before the settlement, right? I mean, a lot of these, I mean, people leave constantly. I mean, that's
right, but it's become rampant just in the last season.
Yeah, right. So, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how boosters are going to, I still don't know how they're going to protect themselves from this, because you're always going to have the risk of with the transfer portal, which has been a, you know, this house settlement is one thing. The transfer portal, I think, was, like I said back then, was the beginning of the death of college sports. But yeah, I mean, people can leave whenever they want. They can sign on to these deals. I mean, maybe they're in contracts where if you leave the school, you don't get paid anymore or whatever by the booster. But yeah, you can get paid on both sides now. I mean, you can get paid by the school. You can get paid by the, you can get an NIL deal in addition to what the school pays you. I mean, it's going to ramp it up. But there's a lot of like problems here. I mean, there's so much pending. I mean, you can just see the Title IX issues that are going to come from this with the negative impact on women's sports. There's all sorts of problems in terms of, you know, that this sets roster limits. You know, I didn't realize till today that, yeah, we have scholarship limits currently, but there weren't really roster limits. So you had some of these like football programs had 140, 150 kids on it. Now they were all walk-ons, you know, but they weren't counting as they weren't getting scholarships, obviously. But now you have these roster limits where, yeah, you're set, you're capped at 105 people no matter what. So a lot of these kids who could walk onto these programs, yeah, they weren't getting any money. I don't know where they're going to go. They're not going to be able to play on these teams anymore. Yeah, they weren't going to ever see the field anyways, but hey, it's your dream to say, hey, I play football for Texas A&M.
Well, let me throw this at you, Bill. According to 24/7 Sports, since last year, since 2004, 25 different Power Four programs have signed at least one five-star player. So the top, you know, the top three, four, five teams aren't getting all the five stars anymore. It is starting to open up a little bit.
Yeah, but I mean, look who's making the playoffs. Look who's
not Alabama last year.
Well, I mean, maybe it had something to do with their coach leaving. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's still, it's not like you still have to have really good coaches. It's not just, you know, get the best players. And I do think the impact of Saban's departure was felt. So, you know, we'll see. And just before NIL, I mean, there was always, look, there was one point in time where I thought my Gators were going to win the national championship every year, and then they absolutely plummeted. So recruiting is part of that, obviously. But I mean, yeah, look, if you look at the recruiting rankings year after year, generally the top 10 teams fluctuate here and there, first to fifth to 10th, but you're seeing the same teams there over and over a year again, whether they're getting paid now, whether they're not getting paid, or they were getting suitcases full of money illegally, whatever it was. But yeah, I mean, this is interesting. And a lot of these schools now, I mean, I read today that it's funny, like they're all starting to implement these different programs. Tennessee, I think they were one of the first ones to say that they were going to charge a talent fee, you know, to their season ticket holders. I think that, Virginia, Minnesota, so a few other schools have come out and said basically they're going to try to recruit a lot of these costs from donors and ticket holders and students and things like that. I mean, it's crazy, like tuition payments. So it's just like,
yeah, but the fans are not happy about that, and they're rebelling a little bit, which I think goes to my earlier point that I'm not sure that the schools are going to be able to count on booster and fan money like they could in the past, because the fans aren't, and the boosters aren't getting a return on that if they're paying this money to somebody who plays for a season or less and then jumps into the transfer portal. And here's an example of that. I think of their fallout from that. Basketball player AJ Dibumsley, I can't pronounce his name, one of the top recruits, number one basketball recruit coming out of high school, committed to BYU over UNC, Kansas, Duke, all those teams.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. something's going on. I don't think it's going to happen overnight, but I think gradually you're going to see a little more parity if this thing works out right. But also, amateurism is just flat out dead, isn't it?
No, I mean, look, they're universities, right? I mean, student athletes are a very small fraction of the what makes up the total population of a state school. But the students who are there to play sports, it is a business now, and it is not about generally academics. I mean, especially if you're a top tier player, I mean, you are there to make money yourself, and you're there to make the school money. And someone said it's a minor league system, and I think that's what we're getting at. I mean, I think we'll probably start to see more Bill Belichick type of folks. And I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see, and I think we've seen this a little bit, former NFL GMs and people who understand how to run a business, like these colleges are coming, and these athletic departments are going to be treated like that. And I mean, it's a lot of money. You're talking big business here, millions and millions and millions of tens of millions of dollars. And yeah, I mean, it's not amateur sports anymore. And I do, you know, I think it's going to be a negative impact on a lot of these other sports. Football and basketball are going to be favored. There's an argument, just saying it, that they produce the most money for the schools, so therefore they should get more attention. So I understand that argument too, but again,
you're more likely to win a championship for your school by putting that money into women's softball at this point, right?
Right.
I mean, to that, I'm joking, but I'm really interested to see what happens with the basketball schools that don't have really good football programs, and they're going to turn that allocation on its head. And a school like UConn is going to say, all right, well, we'll give 75% to the men's basketball team, or, you know, 40-40 to men's and women's basketball in UConn's case. And then teams like, the SEC basketball programs are going to be at a huge disadvantage because their schools are going to give that money to the football program.
Yeah, right, right.
Big Ten, like Michigan, going to the football program.
Totally. And if I was the UConns of the world, I would absolutely take advantage of it. Like, yep. Hey, I can go and get the best players now. Now, all of these universities, these big schools, Ohio State and Texas and Florida and USC, I mean, all of them, no matter where they are, they're going to figure out a way to dominate this somehow, maximize the return. Yes, there's a cap or whatever, but it doesn't, again, you can still get NIL deals. You can get paid by the school and you can get an NIL deal. It's going to be interesting to see what some of the, I mean, when we first started this, it was some of these players were making like $1 million a year, and we're like, holy crap, someone's making a million. Then slowly, then Deion's son was at like six. I mean, I think we're a couple years away
from Arch Manning's up there, right?
Yeah,
was even a starter.
He was making $5 or $6 million. So, who knows? In 5-10 years, you might have athletes making eight figures.
Caitlin Clark took a pay cut to join the WNBA.
Yeah. She did. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, friends, this episode is also brought to you by our sponsor, Assembly. Assembly software, from your old favorites like Needles and TrialWorks to their new cloud-based Neos case management system. Assembly provides the best case management systems for litigation law firms out there. They combine great software with outstanding support. If you're looking to switch to a case management program that makes your whole staff happy, check out assembly.com. Milk, I want to talk to you about this last week in sports. It seems to me that we may be witnessing the best Stanley Cup final and NBA finals combination in terms of quality viewing that we've seen in a long time. What do you think?
But nobody's watching the NBA final.
Right. That's right. It's the most underwatched great basketball that's been on TV for a long time, and it's exactly what we predicted. we predicted that the viewership would be way down because you're talking about Oklahoma and Indiana, basically markets,
right?
But that the game would be fantastic, and that's exactly what's happened. And same with the Stanley Cup. I have been watching hockey since the 70s, and I've seen some great Stanley Cup final games, but geez, these last two games, I mean, other than the fact that Connor McDavid is maybe the best player I've ever seen play, one of the top three for sure, what's made these first two games so special?
Well, look, these two teams were on a collision course. They, as we stated last week, they were the best two teams in the NHL. I think Florida, again, I predicted that they would split, that the Panthers would get a game up in Edmonton. I still have Florida winning the title. I still think it's probably Florida in six. Moose thinks the opposite, Edmonton in six. But it's just, look, and by the way, the NHL ratings, like, they were huge in Canada. They weren't that great here. Probably because maybe you have a Canadian team and nobody wants to watch the Florida Panthers play, but I'm kind of getting annoyed by it. And even as a guy who doesn't even follow the NBA that much, like, people, you are missing great sports. You are missing great entertainment. You have literally one to two of the best players in the NHL on the ice for the next week. You have the best team from top to bottom. And, you know, I think, you know, I said the addition of Marchand was huge for Florida,
and it
showed, the most depth. And I think they're going to win another Stanley Cup playing. Like, get out there and watch these games. You have two goaltenders who, yeah, they're giving up some goals, but I mean, they're playing their lights out. The first two lines for both teams are playing insane hockey. It's just, I get it. It's Edmonton and the Panthers, but you're missing some great, great hockey. I mean, look,
game one of the Stanley Cup final goes into overtime and is a nail biter right to the end. The next night, game one of the NBA finals, the Oklahoma City led that game until the final 0.03 seconds of the game. The first time Indiana led in that game was 0.3 seconds till the end when Halliburton hits another miracle shot at the end. I mean, you can't ask for better drama, sports drama than that. And, you know, you're going to get more of that in the OKC versus Indiana. They're both really good teams. You've got Oklahoma, which is maybe the most talented top to bottom team in the league. They play suffocating defense and they have really good young first round draft picks on that team. But Indiana is really well coached. Like I've been saying for weeks, they've got guys up and down that lineup who are capable of scoring you 20 to 25 points a game, plus Halliburton, who could go off for 30 to 40. And they run an old-fashioned movement offense where everybody's involved. That's why everybody is scoring, which is why bring me to another topic. This debate about whether Halliburton is a superstar because he doesn't always score a ton of points. He's playing in a system, and he plays in that system pretty well. My only beef with him is he doesn't really get heated up until late in the game. But he's not playing in a point guard dominated system like the Knicks, for example, where Brunson dribbles the ball for, you know, 18 seconds of the 24 seconds on the shot clock, and then typically will shoot it himself or throw a desperation pass if he can't find himself a shot. Halliburton's moving without the ball. He's making assists. That whole team is getting open, and whoever's open is taking the shot. It's a fun offense to watch.
What I had predicted, you know, with my obviously intense NBA knowledge, that Oklahoma City would be up 2-0. Pope predicted it would be a blowout. I don't know what you went with. Maybe
I said
split.
And I predicted the Oilers would be up 2-0 at this point.
Yeah. I mean, are you, Do you still see Oklahoma sort of running away with this? I mean, they looked much better last night, right?
No. I never thought Oklahoma would run away with this because I think Indiana beat the best team in the East in Cleveland pretty handily. They beat the third best team in the East, the Knicks, and they were clearly the better team in that series. Indiana's a good team. They just people don't know about them. And like I say, they can score against anyone, and they can do it with five different guys can score. So they're never out of a game. And then they've got Haliburton, who hits clutch shots like no one I've ever seen before,
this
except for Jordan.
Really is crazy.
So, no, I don't think they're out of it. I think Oklahoma's a better team, and when they play like they did last night and they get Hartenstein in a little bit more like they did last night, they're hard to stop.
Yeah.
So I think they're going to win, but it's not going to be a blowout. No way it's a blowout.
And they're back to Indiana, right?
Yeah, they're going back to Indiana for two.
For two. Okay.
So people don't think Haliburton deserves to be called a superstar. I think for the reasons I just said, he is, but he's a different kind. He's not a ball-dominant superstar, but he is a superstar.
But if Haliburton's on the Knicks, everybody knows who he is, right?
Yeah, absolutely, or the Lakers.
Yeah.
It also helped that Chet decided to become aggressive last night and scored. He scored like 6 points in the first game for OKC. And last night he was really aggressive and scored double figures. So we'll see. We'll see how it goes. It's like we were saying, great TV, both series. Tune in. You won't be disappointed.
Yeah. Seriously.
So we're missing Pope. He had some sort of an emergency and he had to step out. Let me give a shout out to one more of our sponsors, Digital Law Marketing. If you want a marketing firm, if you're going to hire a marketing firm to be your partner, you want them to be your exclusive partner in your geographic area and not be doing work for your competitors. With Digital Law Marketing, you have that exclusivity. You have a partnership with a company that's working solely for you in your area. And more importantly, they produce great results. Bison's firm uses them. My firm uses them. We have gotten nothing but skyrocketing organic originations since we've gone with them. And SMQBs is using them to put together our website, and we've had a great experience with them. So for great results with your digital marketing, check out digitallawmarketing.com.
Absolutely. Excited for the launch of the new site.
Yeah. Did you watch the French Open?
I mean, how could you not? It was on for 6 hours yesterday. So
I didn't watch a second of it, men or women.
Yeah. I guess let's start at the women's. Look, congrats to Coco. Unbelievable. That's her second major, I think.
Yeah.
You know, there was some controversy around this win with her opponent. Sabalenka's made some pretty awful statements that basically she lost the match. Coco didn't win it, which is like the worst thing you can say when you lose like a finals. And basically, you know, and look, she played terribly. I mean, she had a ton of.
She blamed the wind.
Yeah, I mean, she had...
Chris Evert came out and said, if you're going to be a major player, you need to learn how to play in the wind. You should. That's no excuse.
Yeah.
Stop your whining.
Right. Like, come on, you got beat. Just admit it. If you think you had a lot more unforced errors, then, like, you need to work on that, right? Like, that's your game. You're not playing well, so, like... You've got a lot to work on. Coco didn't have unforced errors.
Played in the same wind, too.
Yeah, exactly. So, great.
I think the French woman has tried to walk those comments back a little bit.
Yeah, I think she did really well. I'm sure someone on her team was like, you can't go out and say that.
Don't you think Coco is the face of women's tennis now?
Of course.
Unrivaled?
Absolutely. I mean, she's the face of certainly American
U.S.
tennis
women. Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you think
what's not to like about her?
Oh, she's great. She's great. And look, I think she's, I mean, again, she dominated that that match, especially, I mean, look, she went down, she lost the first set, and then to come back and really not even be that competitive in the next two sets, I thought was outstanding. She could have, talk about Sabalenka's comments. I mean, Coco could have totally just collapsed after losing the first set, and I think it was on a tiebreaker too. So to come back,
if this
was
the WNBA, they would take Sabalenka's comments and blow them, you know, plaster them all over the media for weeks and weeks and weeks, and create this nasty rivalry, which actually is what tennis needs right now.
Tennis needs
these rivalries, and now they have a women's rivalry. It sounds like they have a men's rivalry too.
Look, and before we get into Alcaraz and everything he did, I mean, once again, I highlight this every single year, but it's not getting any better. Men's American tennis, we might be at an all-time low.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, we've got nobody. I don't know. Pope might disagree with me if he was still on the show, but I mean, just, we're so far away. And when you watch these two guys play yesterday, just, those two are the best two tennis players in the world. I think obviously with Joker sort of aging out. And that three match points that he came out of, what do you say? I mean, just
Alcaraz.
Yeah. I mean, incredible. That's like impossible. And he did it. And that tiebreaker was, I mean, once he won that fifth set, won the fourth set and got the fifth set into a tiebreaker, you kind of knew it was over. He was just playing dominant to win that last game to get it to a tiebreaker, and I mean, literally almost spanked him 10-0. But yeah, I mean, just an unbelievable effort. He's well on his way to, I mean, you know, we'll see. He's won, I don't know, how many titles has he won now? Multiple. I don't know. I think Sinner had won like three. Alcaraz has won like at least three, right? Maybe four or five. I don't know. But yeah, dominating performance by him. You got to watch it, man.
Yeah, I just didn't watch it. I should have. I heard it was great TV.
It was incredibly long. I will say that. It was like, I think it was close to 6 hours. So,
speaking of dominating performances, let me talk to you friends about the performance of Injury Board in the networking field. Injury Board is a company that is run by a couple of people, including our buddy here, Milk. And Injury Board is a marketing company that focuses on networking, referrals, education, and friendship. And so if, you know, everyone has digital marketing and this and that, but you know, the best marketing sometimes is the old fashioned kind where you meet people and they get to know you and they send you their referrals. And that's where Injury Board comes in, because you're learning together, you're having fun together, you're socializing together. And it's been a great experience for me and for every other member of the SMQBs. If you're interested in joining this wonderful group, check out injuryboard.org.
Thanks, buddy. Word of mouth.
Yeah, I mean it. Let's move on to buzzer beaters.
No, wait, hold on. You got a lasso?
No, I don't have a lasso. I assumed you didn't either. Do you?
No. I don't.
All right.
Pope, we're moving on to buzzer Pope beaters. Pope had them both.
I've got a couple of buzzer beaters, actually. We touched on this earlier. The firing of the three coaches. Pope talked about the Tottenham Spurs coach. We mentioned that the Stars coach, NHL head coach Pete DeBoer, got fired after bringing the team to the conference finals for three straight appearances. And my Knicks fired Coach Thibodeau right after they lost in the Eastern Conference finals to the Pacers. A feat that they had not achieved since the 1970s, like 1971-72 season is the last time they went that far. Huh. And then Tibbs gets fired. He was 26-174 in five seasons with the team. And yeah, I heard Bill Simmons saying, you know, it's maybe it reminds him of the Warriors firing Mark Jackson after he sort of resurrected that team and brought them back to a playoff team, but they felt like maybe he wasn't going to get them across the finish line, and they fired him and brought in Steve Kerr, which turned out to work out just as they predicted. But my question is to the Knicks, who's your Steve Kerr? I haven't seen a Steve Kerr mentioned to replace Thibodeau. You know, the grass isn't always greener. Who are you bringing in? Jay Wright's not interested. You know, don't tell me it's some unknown. They talked about Luke Walton at some point. Are you kidding me?
Oh, boy.
Come on. Ooh. It better be somebody damn good, or this was a dumb, dumb idea.
You have to, right? I mean, that fan base will go nuts. Better have had a plan.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I would have been happy with Jay Wright.
Yeah. Yeah.
Another one I have is, what in the world are the Steelers thinking? They let the whole offseason fritter away, and they went from last year having two, you know, like B-minus, B starting quarterbacks in Justin Fields and Russell Wilson. And they let them both walk, and they have like C-minus quarterbacks now, and they're desperate. And so they're like, oh, God, are we going to get Kirk Cousins or are we going to get Rodgers? They signed 41-year-old Aaron Rodgers, who the last time he was healthy was in the 2021 season. In 2022, he fractured his thumb. In 23, he tore his Achilles. In 24, last year, he had a hamstring, a knee, and an ankle injury. And looked like hell. He looked like hell all 3 years. He put together mediocre numbers last year. He wasn't terrible, but he's a fragile old man, and I just don't get it. Do you get it?
No. $13 million. And, he looked terrible last year. Now, I mean, he played for the Jets. I don't know. I think this could be a disaster. Now, they arguably, I guess, he didn't have much of an offensive line, I guess. You could argue that. But he had a hell of an offense, right?
Yeah.
He had a great running back. He had a bunch of star receivers.
Good defense.
Yeah, decent defense. I mean, does anyone see this going any differently in Pittsburgh?
No, I don't. I mean, they could have drafted a quarterback and didn't.
And they've gotten rid of everyone, you know? I mean, not that I was a big fan of Russell Wilson, but I think this will be a 1 year, maybe they're, I don't know what they're thinking.
Five games. He's not going to make it a full year. He's going to get hurt again.
The problem, though, is Tomlin refuses to have a losing season. So if he has another 500 or above, when are you ever going to be in an opportunity to get a good rookie quarterback? He won't stop.
Last draft, Shedeur Sanders was available.
That's true.
In every round.
That's true. So you will look at whether that was a fatal mistake to go with Aaron Rodgers over him. But I don't see any. Who's the Steelers wide receivers now? Because Pickens is gone, right?
They spent a ton of money on DK Metcalf.
Yes. Okay.
Or DK Metcalf, right?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe. That's just.
They've got Freiermuth, tight end.
Yeah. And what, who's in their division? Bengals?
The Bengals, the Browns, and.
I mean, I've got the Bengals like making a massive comeback this year. Like, yeah. That's a tough. I mean, they. And Baltimore, right?
Baltimore. Their division. It's a tough division. Really tough division.
You're going to tell me Aaron Rodgers is going to compete with those two quarterbacks? No way.
Yeah. Pope, we're going to jump back after this, but we're on buzzer beaters. You have one?
I guess my buzzer beater would have been probably the preview of the U.S. Open this week at Oakmont. I don't know if you guys have already discussed that, but...
No, we have not. Talk us through it.
We are looking for some carnage this weekend, my friends. Oakmont has about 5-inch thick rough, and I don't know if you guys have seen some of the videos that the players are shooting when they go out there, but I mean, you can't even find the ball half the time. And, you know, they want it to be at least a half a stroke penalty. I think it's going to be higher. Somebody said that he would take +4 right now in the clubhouse on Sunday afternoon and have a pretty good chance, feel pretty good about a chance of winning. Will Rory be able to come off back after his disaster milk at the Canadian Open? I don't know if you saw that, but shot a 79.
Oh, I'm well
including,
aware.
Including the old frosty little snowman on a par 4.
Didn't he miss the cut by 12 strokes or something?
He blew up.
That's a shame.
It's like +9.
What a shame.
So, and he said his head's not really in it right now. So I don't know. Mm. Right? He got his master. He's got his career slam, you know. Maybe he should
retire.
Maybe he's not hungry right now.
Yeah.
But I can tell you who's hungry is Scotty. Scotty's looking good. He is, guys, as a prohibitive a favorite that we've had at the U.S. Open since Tiger in 2009. So, That being said, I don't think Scotty will win because, I mean, the field is – you have to assume somebody from the field will step up. But I don't know. It's going to be fun. I love watching U.S. Open. It is train wreck golf at its finest.
That's great. The conditions will be wonderful to watch. But I'll tell you what, man, looking at that leaderboard yesterday at the Canadian Open and how it ended up, golf better get it together quickly because that was terrible. I'm sorry. I mean, like, you didn't recognize like the top 20 guys yesterday. Well,
Sam Burns is a known.
Sam
commodity.
Burns. I mean, that's who we're depending on now. I don't know.
It was good drama. I don't know if you watched it. Playoff holes and the final playoff hole, 3-wood guy hit 5 feet from like 250. It was an amazing shot.
Yeah. They need Tiger back, but he's never coming back. So,
well, what'll be interesting, and we always talk about this, is how will the LIV guys do at the Open? I mean, you'll have Bryson.
Bryson's DJ. Been playing well. He'll compete. I don't know about the other guys.
Well, Bryson's defending champion.
Yeah, that's right.
Plays well out of deep rough too. I mean, relatively speaking, because he's so strong.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's see if he can get his irons yardage down. Because at the Masters Sunday, he had some issues, as we discussed.
With the 9-iron. Milk, you have any other buzzer beater?
Yeah, a little update on college sports, college World Series. We've got one more game undecided. Pope's Dukies against Murray State.
Let's go Racers.
Murray State.
I'm a huge Racer fan.
One game away from playing in the College World Series for the first time ever. Right now, we've got Louisville. We've got UCLA, Arkansas, LSU, Oregon State nicely beat FSU last night. Love to see it. Arizona, go nerd. Massive upset over UNC. They're in the dance.
Diamond Heels go down after winning 18-2 in the first game in Chapel Hill. You would have thought they could have pulled out one of the two games.
That was a shocking two games in a row from Arizona. So we'll see. Last game will be tonight, and we'll start in Omaha, I guess, later this week for the first game. It'll be a fun – it's really fun, by the way, talking about earlier Roosters – that no one's watching the NBA finals or the NHL finals, watch the College World Series. It is really good baseball. Future got all sorts of MLB talent all over the field on these teams. Guys that you'll see in 5 years playing on MLB rosters. It's a fun time, and it's I've never been. I want to go. It's on my bucket list. But tune into these games. They've been fun to watch, the Super Regionals for sure.
So it'll be Arkansas and LSU, I guess, the top two seeds, right?
Yeah. And then probably Oregon State and UCLA. So, yeah.
Arkansas. Coastal Carolina knocked off Auburn, and they were number 4. So the 1, 2, and 4 seeds all lost.
That's right.
All right, Pope, we'll go back for you if you have a punch. Do you have a punchable face?
I guess I had a small punch. I mean, this is probably nothing new, but in watching, and we'll, I guess, a good segue to the French Open, but in watching the finals, I mean, I don't understand. I've never been to a tennis match that mattered, but these assholes who, as the, you know, player is about to toss the ball, all scream out something just to try to get encouragement or just so people can hear them. I don't know, but it's distracting. You know, it distracts, obviously, the players. I don't understand why they don't get thrown out. It's like you never hear about somebody yelling, and you know, everybody's like, shh, but you never hear about them getting thrown out. I mean, throw some people out. Let's stop this. This is, it is distracting, and I'm going to punch anybody who continues to do that.
Okay.
All right.
It's like we needed that a falls punch. Into maybe you the provided. Milk slap category.
Yeah, it's a little slap.
Well, let me end up with just another smaller buzzer beater. The Red Sox have finally called up the number one prospect in minor league baseball, Roman Anthony.
Yep.
He's an outfielder. He's been just tearing up Double A and Triple A. It'll be interesting to see if he's the real deal because, everyone who follows prospects in baseball has said he's the real deal. So we'll see. He's coming up now. Hope he does well. Anything else, guys?
Well, I thought we were going back to the French Open real quick.
No, we covered it.
All right. I love seeing Alcaraz in center. What a great match. And I think we're going to see that. That's the next, Rafa Nadal or Nadal Joker. Those guys have won the last six majors, and I don't see anybody really competing as much. The last time one of those guys won was in 23, excuse me, U.S. Open with Joker. And I think we've seen the last of the Joker championships.
I agree. Pope, question to you because I brought it up earlier. Do we have a hope in the United States for American male tennis? Do we have?
Well, we had two guys make the quarters.
Okay.
That's
a win these days for.
That is a win. That is a win. I guess it's service dependent, but no. We need to continue to look at our women, Coco and Madison, for future USA championships.
Well, it's amazing that we cannot find a good men's tennis player.
But it is amazing. What the last one was? Sampras, Agassi.
Sampras or Agassi.
Yeah, we have Courier. I mean, all those guys.
Courier's so old. I saw he was on the broadcast for TNT. I mean, I'm like, who is that guy? Oh my God, it's Jim Courier.
It's Jim Courier. Yeah, we had him for a little bit there.
All right. Well, hopefully this is the last show where tennis is the last word. We are wrapped. Thanks, guys.
See you.